Well, if you're just joining us for this portion of our worship service, I wanted to offer an invitation to you to fill out a visitor's card. We would love to get in contact with you at some point about a Bible study if you're curious about gospel things, and to thank you for your participation with us this morning. I want to talk about big problems today and how small problems turn into big problems when we neglect those small problems. Recently, a merino sheep in Australia named Chris was found just outside of Canberra, barely able to walk and completely overgrown. A professional shearer named Ian Elkins volunteered to shear the mammoth creature because his life was actually in danger because of its condition. It took 42 minutes and sedation to remove the fleece that weighed 89 pounds and was over 18 inches thick. About 30 men's suits can be made with that amount of wool. It is believed that the sheep was about 6 years old and had never been shorn before. Now, as silly as this introduction sounds, I think there's a real spiritual lesson to be made from Chris the sheep. Because of the way that they're bred, some breeds of sheep, including the merino sheep, must be shorn annually. Has to be shorn. His fleece will continue to grow and grow and grow and grow. Without proper grooming, these kinds of sheep can actually face infestations of parasites, they can get infections, and they can die from heat exhaustion. So Chris's story very easily could have turned out very differently if he hadn't been found by somebody and finally shorn. So how did Chris get himself into this predicament, aside from the fact that he's bred to be this way and he is nothing but a sheep? I would say that it all started with one shearing skipped. One season that turned into two, that became three, that eventually became 6 years without being shorn. A problem that could have been managed very early in its stages became very unmanageable later on. The same thing happens to us when we neglect our spiritual duties, a lack of discipline in our affairs or our relationships, or sins that get completely out of control and ruin our lives. So what I want to do in our lesson this morning is consider these kinds of problems, small problems that needed to be dealt with a long time ago, but were ignored and eventually became very, very big problems. And the thing about big problems is that when they become big problems, it takes big solutions to finally fix them. I think we can all think back in our own lives of situations like this. Innocuous or not, no matter how innocent they were, we can think back on situations where you should have taken care of it a long time ago, but you didn't, and then it had to become a really, really big deal. Silly kinds of things like, I should have mowed my grass about a week sooner. You ever had that happen to you? You know, where you got your watering schedule going. It happens at 4 o'clock in the morning, so you forget how much you're actually watering your grass. And you go, but it's 110 degrees outside. I don't feel like mowing today. So you wait till the next 110 degree day, and you go, well, I can't mow today either. And eventually, 2 or 3 weeks go by, and it's still 110 degrees outside, but now your grass is 18 inches long. Silly things like that. But how about really big things as well? Health problems. Should have taken care of it a long time ago. Should have had the doctor look at it a long time ago. Should have started the diet a long time ago. Should have watched my cholesterol a long time ago. Should have exercised, taken better care of myself a long time ago. And now I'm in a real bind. But spiritual problems as well. If I had just apologized, none of this ever would have happened. If I had just kept my eyes away from that one image, this never would have started. I want to look at Josiah's big problem. Turn with me in the Bible to 2 Kings chapter 22, and we're going to know some things about Josiah's big problem. A problem that should have been taken care of a long time ago, but festered and became a very big problem that required a big solution. In 2 Kings chapter 22, as we observe the early years of Josiah's reign, the theme of big problems comes to mind. Where are we in the context of the book of 2 Kings? We've had a few bad kings now in Judah. A few bad kings along the way. Josiah's father and his grandfather, Manasseh, were both very, very bad kings. Before them you had Hezekiah, very good king, but even Hezekiah, a good king, really couldn't be the solution for everybody's problems in Judah. And Judah, spiritually, was still stagnating, even when Hezekiah was king. So essentially what you have then is generation after generation after generation of spiritual stagnation. People who are not keeping the Passover, people who are not practicing the sacrifices, but worse than that, people whose hearts are simply not in it. Isn't it interesting that Hezekiah was a good king and a reformer, and yet Isaiah was prophesying during his lifetime? And Isaiah had some pretty nasty things to say about Judah. By the way, I'm sorry, Judah Greeley. Every time I talk about how bad Judah got, I always feel bad. Like, and Judah was awful, and Judah was full of sin. No, it's okay, Judah. You're good. He looks up like, okay. As long as you preach short. But Judah was in a real bad spot here in 2 Kings 22. And the temple now was dilapidated. So we pick up here in 2 Kings 22 and verse 3. Now, it came about in the 18th year of King Josiah that the king sent Shaphan, the son of Azaliah, the son of Meshulam, the scribe, to the house of the Lord, saying, "Go up to Hilkiah the high priest, that he may count the money brought into the house of the Lord, which the doorkeepers have gathered from the people. And let them deliver it into the hand of the workmen who have the oversight of the house of the Lord, and let them give it to the workmen who are in the house of the Lord to repair the damages to the house, to the carpenters and the builders and the masons, and for buying timber and hewn stone to repair the house. Only no accounting shall be made with them for the money delivered, for they deal faithfully." Now what's interesting is, if you know where the story is going, I'm going to ruin something for you if you don't, but if you know where the story is going, you know that until this point, Josiah is basically ignorant of the law of God. They don't know where the scriptures are. They haven't read the law. They're ignorant of it. And yet, even in Josiah's relative ignorance, there's still something about a dilapidated temple that bothers him. There's still something about that we're supposed to be worshiping God. We don't know God. We're not following a law. There's kind of a moral ignorance now in Judah. But there's just something about a dilapidated temple to God that just doesn't seem right to Josiah. We got to get some money together and put this thing back together. Let's make some repairs. Let's get this temple in order. And I really appreciate that you can see, even in Josiah's ignorance, there's something about him and his personality and what he already knows about God that motivates him to, at the very least, make sure that God's house is not in disrepair. But that's not the end. We pick up in verse 8. "So Hilkiah the high priest said to Shaphan the scribe, 'I have found the book of the law in the house of the Lord.' And Hilkiah gave the book to Shaphan, who read it. And Shaphan the scribe came to the king and brought back word to the king and said, 'Your servants have emptied out the money that was found in the house, and they have delivered it into the hand of the workmen who have the oversight of the house of the Lord.' Moreover, the scribe told the king, saying, 'Hilkiah the priest has given me a book.'" You notice the way he says it with an indefinite article? A book, not the book or the law or the scriptures. He says, "He's given me a book." There was this book that the high priest found in the house of the Lord. What do you make of this? And Shaphan read it in the presence of the king. And in verse 11, "It came about when the king heard the words of the book of the law that he tore his clothes." Why did he tear his clothes? Because he knew that Judah could do better. And he knew that for generations, Judah had not been living up to what they were expected to do. That as a people, as a culture, as a nation, they were not obeying the law. Now, they didn't know what the law was. They were ignorant. The law got stuffed in the back of a closet in the temple. It was under a bunch of other junk and everything. They didn't know where it was. It was just in a storage closet in the temple. They hadn't read it. They didn't know it. But they were guilty of it. They were guilty of it. So here's where we come in with our lesson, right? This was a big problem. The temple is in disrepair. We've not been practicing the Passover. My grandfather Manasseh was king for over 50 years, and he was known for child sacrifice and Baal worship. Yeah, we've allowed some pretty horrible things to come in. We've allowed some pretty awful stuff to rule in our kingdom. That must have hurt him a lot when he was reading in Leviticus 20 about sacrificing children to Molech, and you shall not do that. And he remembers that his grandpa Manasseh was known for child sacrifice to Baal. Boy, that part of the law must have really hit him hard when the scribe was reading it to him. He realized, we didn't know the law, but we were guilty of it. That's a big problem. It's time to deal with it. Admitting that there is a problem is the first step to recovering from a big problem. If we don't even believe that we have a mess on our hands, we will not be motivated to clean it up. It could have been very easy for Josiah to say, well, we didn't know, so what's the problem? I didn't know there was the law of God sitting in a storage closet in the temple all this time. We didn't know what the Ten Commandments were. We didn't know about the sacrificial system. We didn't know we were supposed to be keeping the Passover this whole time. If we didn't know, how could we be held responsible? And yet, that's never the attitude that leads to change. People who look for excuses of why they don't need to change never do change. People who pat themselves on the back or forgive themselves, they're never the people motivated to do what needs to be done, to fix the big problems in their lives. We need to be very, very careful about this attitude. So let's make some applications then, and we'll work our way through the story a little bit here as we go, but let's make some applications. You never know what you'll find. You know how it is when it's springtime and it's time to clean out the garage? When it's time to finally get out and take care of all the jobs that you've been neglecting? Well, for us in Phoenix, I guess it's the opposite. We spend the whole summer hiding in our homes in the dark. But whenever it is that you get to that time where it's time to clean things out, go through all those old boxes, organize your closet, go into the back of the refrigerator, you never know what you're going to find back there. Well, the refrigerator, it's always a bad surprise, but you never know. You ever have it where you clean out your garage and you open up a box and you go, hey, I forgot we had those. Honey, did you know we had a fondue set? And it's almost like a Christmas present right there. It's like a wedding gift that you got 10 years ago and you forgot that someone gave it to you. Like, hey, that's kind of cool. That's pretty neat. Did you know we had a whole box of koozies back here? This is pretty exciting. You never know what you're going to find. And you might find that there were some treasures that you forgot about. You might find the law of God, the scriptures, in a storage closet, neglected all this time. But there's other things. As we go through our lives and make changes in our lives, we may find treasures in our lives as well. Relationships that we forgot about. Relationships that we thought were lost. Friends from high school or college, friends from a church that we used to go to many years ago, that we finally get caught up with them. Positive attitudes that you used to have before you became a grown-up and started being bitter about everything in life. Romance in your marriage that got set aside and ignored because of the distractions of life that all seemed so much more important than keeping the fire alive in your relationship. Innocence that used to be your constant companion before you knew the ways of the world and fell headlong into sin. A relationship with God that used to be full of zeal and excitement, but got lost in the studying, in the job, in the pursuit of wealth, and in the raising of children. a love and zeal for reading the Bible, a meaningful prayer life, excitement at worshiping God, and a sense of usefulness and innate value that comes with participating at church. When we clean out our minds and clean out our lives and resolve to live better and fix the big problems, we will be shocked by some of the things that we find in there. But here's the other side of the coin. Sometimes you clean out your garage and you move all the boxes back from the wall, and what do you find? You find mold hiding back there. You find a crack in your foundation. You find a problem that's been hiding behind all the things and the clutter and the distractions of life. I think that's what a lot of Josiah found. Josiah found a great treasure in the law. Yes, he found a great treasure, but in finding that treasure, he also found spiritual mold in his kingdom. He found that crack in his foundation. He found rotten drywall. Yes, he found a treasure, but that treasure only emphasized the spiritual disarray of his kingdom. And it is because of that spiritual disarray that he resolved to fix it. So the second application that I see from the story of Josiah's big problem is that you never do a job only halfway. Go to chapter 23. And notice with me, if you will, chapter 23, verses 1 through 3. So then the king sent, and they gathered to him all the elders of Judah and of Jerusalem. And the king went up to the house of the Lord, and all the men of Judah, and all the inhabitants of Jerusalem with him. And the priests and the prophets and all the people, both small and great. And he read in their hearing all the words of the book of the covenant, which was found in the house of the Lord. Wouldn't that be great? Leadership in a country reading scriptures out loud. What an awesome moment that this must have been for the people of Jerusalem and Judah to see their king, their young king, reading the scriptures to them. So in verse 3, the king stood by the pillar and made a covenant before the Lord to walk after the Lord, to keep his commandments and his testimonies and his statutes with all his heart and all his soul, and to carry out the words of this covenant that were written in the book. And all the people entered into that covenant. And the rest of chapter 23, of course, we don't have time to read it this morning, but in the rest of chapter 23, you get some detail about how he went about keeping this covenant with the Lord. Everywhere that there was a high place, everywhere that there was an idol, everywhere that there was a temple, everywhere that there were priests who were serving any god but the God, he went about destroying them. Totally, utterly, burning the idols and throwing their ashes onto the graves, burning down the houses of those idols, taking the ashes and throwing them into the river Kidron. It was a complete and total and utter annihilation of everything that was sinful. Every idol he could get his hands on was destroyed. Never do the job halfway. If you're going to fix a spiritual problem in your life, fix it. And don't stop until it's fixed. Don't go only halfway and get distracted. If you're going to resolve to make your marriage better, then make your marriage better and don't quit until it's where you want it to be and where God expects it to be. Don't stop until it's the marriage of Ephesians 5. Don't stop until it's a marriage that you can read about in Scripture. Don't stop until you love your spouse to the point of total self-sacrifice. If you're going to break an addiction, don't quit only halfway. If you're going to stop looking at internet pornography, don't just go a month and pat yourself on the back. Don't just cut some things out of your life. Don't do the job halfway. Because only doing a job halfway is not doing a job at all. You ever have those home projects? While we're kind of on that theme of home repair and home projects, do you ever have that home project where you go, oh, I'm going to do this? And all I'm going to do, it's just going to be one afternoon. The way I measure it, by the way, I like doing home repairs, by the way, but I measure it in trips to Home Depot. This was the really easy job, it's a one-tripper. Actually, I've never had a one-tripper. I've never only gone to Home Depot once. You know, you'd be like, oh, it was a two-tripper. Oh, this was a five tripper. The really big ones. Man, I put down a laminate floor in our house back in Abilene. That was a 10 tripper. Easily 10 tripper to Home Depot. But the thing about it is sometimes you get these projects started and then you get distracted by something else. You start off, oh, I'm going to put a new dishwasher in. But when I pull the old one out, oh, look, there's rotten drywall, so I'm going to fix the drywall. Oh, but then you're going to have to level the floor back there. Oh, but then I've got to do this, and oh, I've got to do... And then before you know it, you're halfway done with a whole bunch of jobs, and your kitchen is torn apart, and your current state is actually worse than your original state. If you're going to fail, it's going to be because you only started things and finished them halfway. Never do it halfway. Take stuff to the dump. Spring cleaning tends to reveal a rampant problem in our society, which is hoarding. And I don't in any way want to make light of hoarding because I know that a lot of people suffer from it. And I know that there are people who suffer from it because of emotional distress or psychological problems. I'm not ever going to make a joke about hoarding. And that's tough coming from someone with obsessive compulsive disorder who likes to have a tidy house. We often throw worthless things into our storage area or our garage because we have this mistaken idea that they might be worth something someday. They never are. Newspapers from 1983 are never worth anything. Boxes and boxes of old metal wire hangers, they never come in handy like we think they will. All those nuts and bolts and screws that we put into the boxes in the garage, you're never going to use them. The thing about Josiah is it might have been very easy for Josiah to look at some of the things in his kingdom and to say, that might come in handy someday. We don't have to get rid of all the Baals, do we? We don't have to get rid of the whole Asherah collection, do we? There's a great quote, and I believe it was one of you actually who posted on Facebook just the other day. The great quote that says, never hold on to a problem just because you spent a lot of time making it. And when you look actually at what Josiah did in his kingdom, it was actually a very impressive thing, and it was a very complete job. Yet it would have been, again, very tempting for him to say, oh, but it took us so long to make all these idols. And look at the craftsmanship. Maybe we can make a museum to the idols so that we won't worship them, but we can go remember how it was. Let's read here a few verses. 2 Kings chapter 23. 2 Kings 23. Look at verse 14. And we don't have time to read the whole passage, but let's just get a sense, get a sampling of the thoroughness of the job. So the king commanded Hilkiah the high priest and the priests of the second order and the doorkeepers to bring out of the temple of the Lord all the vessels that were made for Asherah and all the vessels made for Baal and for all the host of heaven. And he burned them outside Jerusalem in the fields of the Kidron and carried their ashes to Bethel. And he did away with the idolatrous priests whom the kings of Judah had appointed to burn incense in the high places. He goes on to say in verse 6, and he brought out the Asherah from the house of the Lord to the brook Kidron and burned it at the brook and ground it to dust and threw its dust on the graves of the common people. Verse 7, he also broke down all the houses of the male cult prostitutes, which were in the house of the Lord, where the women were weaving hangings for the Asherah. Verse 8, he brings all of the priests of these idols, all of the priests of these foreign gods, and he has them killed. Look at verse 11. He did away with the horses which the kings of Judah had given to the sun. I believe these are like statues of horses, statues of some kind. At the entrance of the house of the Lord, by the chamber of Nathan-Melech the official, which was in the precincts, and he burned the chariots of the sun with fire. All of the altars in verse 12, all of the high places in verse 13, all of the sacred pillars in verse 14, all of it, everything. Imagine how much craftsmanship had to go into all these projects, though. All of these idols and these high places and these pillars, all of the work, all of the money, all of the effort. But never hold on to a problem just because you spent a lot of time making it. Take stuff to the dump. Because a lot of the problems that we have in life belong there. What are some of the things that you and I need to take to the dump then?
How about bad friendships? People who hold us down? People who are real negative? And there's a lot of negative people out there. Man, I was at a restaurant just the other day, just getting lunch, and I was waiting in line to order my food. And the guy in front of me, he was a strange man. He turned around and he started mumbling stuff about bears. And he said, "Man, I hate bears. I wish we could just kill all the bears." And there was a picture of a panda on the wall. He said, "We should just shoot all the pandas and be done with it." I was like, wow. You got to cut people like that out of your life. Like people like that, yes, really, seriously. But there's a lot of other things that we need to cut out. In Bible class this morning, we talked about chopping your right arm off and cutting your right out. We talked about, is Jesus being literal there? Does he actually mean cutting your right hand off and chopping your right eye out? Well, whether he's being literal or non-literal is immaterial. Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is worth it. It was worth it. So how do we get to these big problems? How does the small problem become the big problem in our spiritual lives? How did it get to be where Judah was a country of God's people, where they were partaking of the Passover, and they had a beautiful temple built by Solomon, and they had righteous and honest kings, men after David's heart? How did they get from that point to where the scriptures were collecting dust in a storage closet, and children were being sacrificed to the Baals? It was small steps. A lot of small steps along the way. Nobody in Judah planned on becoming unfaithful. Nobody woke up one day and intentionally hid the law in a storage closet of the temple. Nobody called for an end for the Passover feast. But it happened. As one day of spiritual neglect turned into two. As one compromise turned into another. Everybody's sins might be unique in form, but everybody's sins are made of the same stuff. Motivation, opportunity, and result. Very few Christians wake up in the morning intending to commit a sin that day. Very few Christians wake up in the morning planning on sin, premeditating a sin. But we all end up asking the same questions when we do commit sin. How did it come to this? Where did it all go wrong? Let me give you a couple of practical applications as we bring our lesson to a close. And maybe some of these will hit you a little closer to home than others. I know these are a tough sell for me in my life. What we wear represents the direction that we're going spiritually. You might not think it's that big of a deal, but what you wear might be one of those small steps where you go from righteous Christian living the godly life to where did it all go wrong? Well, maybe the first step you took was in the things that you wore. Yeah, innocent enough, right? Innocuous enough. But maybe that was the first step. How do you dress at work? How do you dress for worship? How do you dress at school? Should the word sexy ever be a word that describes your attire? Is that what you're going for? Because maybe that's the first step that you take down a bad path. How we spend our time is very telling of our priorities. It all starts with missing worship here and there, being too busy to help another Christian or spend time with our children. One Sunday turns into two, which turns into three, which turns into 6 months, which eventually turns into I don't go at all anymore. We also rationalize lust in all of its various forms of severity. We make excuses for lust, which eventually opens the door for flirtation, which eventually leads the way for an actual relationship with somebody. We allow our feelings to override our thinking on a subject, and we rationalize things by saying, well, if it feels right, how can it be wrong? Falling away is a process that begins with the heart. Look at Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 12. In Hebrews 3 and verse 12. Take care, brethren, he says, lest there should be in any one of you an evil, unbelieving heart in falling away from the living God. Where does falling away from the living God start? He says it starts with the heart. When your heart starts to break down, when your resolve and your convictions start to fail, the rest of you is going to follow eventually. And the last point that we'll make is that someone might say, I'm too far gone now. It's just too hard getting back on track. Maybe they should have just euthanized Chris the sheep. 89 pounds of wool, that sheep must have been miserable. Absolutely miserable. Infested with parasites, covered in filth, barely able to walk. Maybe we should have just euthanized Chris the sheep. Because some problems are just too big to ever work your way out of. I wonder if the Corinthians ever allowed that to cross their mind. When in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 9 and 10, it says, you were adulterers, and you were homosexuals, and you were liars, and you were thieves, and you were drunkards. Such were some of you. And I wonder if some of them also thought, I'm too far gone. God can't fix somebody like me. God can't work with this kind of material. But verse 11 of 1 Corinthians chapter 6 says, but you were washed, sanctified, justified. And Jesus is the only one who can do that. Yes, there are some very big problems that we get into in life. Problems of our own design. Problems that we craft for ourselves. Things that never had to become big problems. We should have fixed them a long time ago. We never should have taken the first step. But as long as you are alive, it is never too late to turn things around. To turn your face toward heaven and to live for Him in this life and in the next. Whatever need you might have, please come forward as we stand and sing.